time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
What's more normal than talking how much Nebraska sucks these days?
Pete Thamel.
So I'm going to take my pod victory lap after getting beating up for being on the Chip Kelly bandwagon for the past 2 years.
With SI's Pat Forty.
This is Scott Frost's best team. You know, they're going to be so much better, blah, 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 blah. And if anything, they were as bad as ever, if not worse.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
Welcome to Pod. Thoughts here are with everyone down the Gulf. Louisiana, New Orleans, of course, is one of our great eating and drinking towns. Sort of a college football hub, even though the only team there is Tulane. But so many great games. And then just thoughts to everybody, I guess, you know, the hurricane slows down, but when it starts raining up in those Tennessee mountains and Kentucky and West Virginia, like, you know, the flooding can just be as bad. So awful situation, Hurricane Ida. We hope everyone is good. Homa got it tough. I know that whole area. Pat, you know that area down below New Orleans well.
Yeah, South Louisiana there, yeah, where we went on the fishing trip that you notably were not invited on.
I wasn't going to bring it up because I didn't want to hurt my feelings.
No, but in April, we went, Golden Meadow, Louisiana, down in the marsh country. And it's you go past LaRose, which is Ed Orgeron's hometown, and boy, did that place look like it took a beating. Homa, Grand Isle. Golden Meadow down there, and those Cajun boys that were our guides and our cooks and our hosts were great guys, a lot of fun. I sure hope they are doing well and that their lodge survived, and I hope they evacuated. I don't know whether they were the type to evacuate, but I sure hope they did.
That place got the brunt. And as you know, I don't know if I've ever made it that far down, but the elevation in a town like that is like 4'2".
Yeah, zero.
Basically like a fourth grader.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it is absolutely on the water table, and then you get out into the marsh and everything's built up out of the water. I mean, there is not much in the way of actual land there, and I fear for how much might have been washed over, eroded, and may never come back.
I was trying to explain to my kids a little bit about that. We were talking about it. It's my younger daughter, just like if a river in the north or something, you know, rises 5 feet or 10 feet. I mean, you're going to have some flooding, but it's not just going to overwhelm the entire town. But I'm like, these towns are like 60 feet wide, you know, and it's just like you're just gone, you know, thinking of you down there. If you're listening, I know it's frustrating. We'll try to keep it to give you a little bit of normalcy. What's more normal than talking how much Nebraska sucks these days? Transition, baby. I'm in midseason form, even if the Huskers aren't.
They actually look like midseason of the last 3 seasons, or really the last decade, if you think about it. So it's just not good midseason form. They look like the midseason form of a team that's gone 9-18 in the Big Ten in Scott Frost's time there. Is that number right?
That number's right. 9-19 maybe now. I'm not sure whether that the 9-18 count. Yes, they should be 9-19.
Yeah. Didn't Scott Frost win more games in that one season at UCF than he has at Nebraska?
Now. Yes. He has to go 15-1 to equal Bill Callahan's record that still chaps Nebraska fans. Nebraska lost by 8-30-22 to Illinois. I don't know what you take out of this for Nebraska. I mean, the coaching was terrible. The execution was terrible. Mental errors. I mean, he said, if I had a nickel for every time we discussed this, I'd have a lot of nickels. This is from a guy who's got a lot of nickels. Like, he gets paid a lot of nickels. You know, when I watched the game, I saw maybe most concerning is there was just nobody any good on the team. Like, like when they were coming back, like their comeback attempt, you're like, who? Like, there's no separation on the wide receivers. Like, there's no game ranking talent. I mean, it's 4 recruiting classes in. Brett Bielema, who we'll talk to. This is the beauty of having Brett Bielema back in college football. This is an incredible line, quote, because he just says stuff. The only guy that really could beat us, we thought, was number two. That's it. And I think that's 100% truth. I think they looked at this game and were like, these guys are not any good. They got the quarterback. And if we can stop him, we can win this football game, even though we ain't any good.
Yeah.
This is a meltdown right here. This was ugly.
It was incredibly bad. The fact that, you know, all of the talk before this season, this is Scott Frost's best team. You know, they're going to be so much better, blah, 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 blah. And if anything, they were as bad as ever, if not worse. And it is hilarious. Like the offseason emphasis on special teams. Oh, well, you field a punt on the one and get a safety. You miss two extra points. The emphasis, we're going to eliminate mistakes. Well, you commit these penalties that absolutely break your backs. Adrian Martinez is our four-year guy at quarterback. He fumbles and it turns into a scoop and score. And Dan, to your larger point, that's the truth. Their running backs are pedestrian. Their receivers don't drop the ball, but they don't separate. They've got nobody that takes the top off of defense. Wandale Robinson had that ability for them, and he transferred back home to Kentucky. And where's the speed? Where's the explosiveness? And that's the thing with Adrian Martinez. His best talent is running the ball. As a dropback quarterback, he's sub-average. He holds the ball too long. He doesn't see things well. He's tentative. He doesn't have great mechanics or great accuracy. So the best thing they could do is run him 20 times a game, but then you need somebody else to throw the ball. They didn't have a backup option because Luke McCaffrey transferred. I mean, that program is a mess. And here's the thing. And not only does it come home on Scott Frost in his fourth year, but the thing that really stood out to me, Frost, as we know, is prickly and cocky, and he got his hand caught in the cookie jar with these improper practices that is now an NCAA investigation and got trotted out in front of the media, and he was embarrassed about it. And so he spent last week trying to be Bill Belichick with the media in Lincoln. He had two press conferences and spoke for a total of like 7 minutes. And every answer was this snippy, hands on hips. We're just getting ready for Saturday. We're just preparing for Saturday. We're just preparing. I mean, just like purposefully being a d-. And guess what? Bill Belichick can do that because he wins Super Bowls. Scott Frost ain't won jack at Nebraska. You might need a couple people in your corner. And that media corps is not exactly a bunch of ravenous jackals, but they're on your case now, brother.
Pat, let me ask you this. You were there, and I did start to watch a little UConn-Fresno and got a little distracted when Illinois took over in the third quarter. There were other games sort of starting to happen. I was keeping my eye on the Chip Kelly Express. Would you say that Nebraska had better talent than Illinois? Like, I watched that game in the first half thinking, like, first of all, it was just coaching malpractice that they didn't just quarterback run Martinez and design sets.
Yeah.
Like, that to me was just, yeah, you have no idea what you're doing at that point if you don't do that. But do you feel like if those two teams played on a neutral field, Nebraska should win the game 6-7 times?
Probably so. I mean, I think that they had some better talent on the defensive front, maybe front seven. But on the whole, I mean, I didn't look at Nebraska and say they are 10 times better than, yes, Illinois. And Illinois ain't good. You know, yeah, I'll give Bielema and his staff credit and the players credit for buying in and doing what they did to come out and play well. But it is not great separation in terms of talent, in my opinion.
So this is what I credit Brett Bielema for here. Like, it was classic Bill Belichick. Hey, let's just let the other team screw it up, right? That's really what, yeah, they did. They, yep, just said, okay, let's let them field a punt inside the two and throw a forward pass after. Let's let them on a third and two cough it up with a minute left and we can scoop and score it. Like, and then we're just going to, I mean, when they took control of the game, they just ran very basic run plays, right? Like, that was to me, give Bielema credit. He just sat back, played basic conservative football, let Scott Frost screw it up, and Scott Frost screwed it up. That was how I saw that game unfold from that perspective.
Yeah, and I think the thing about the talent is that's the most concerning. You could fix a lot of that stuff, presumably. You're not going to have a scoop and score, but if you don't have the players to beat Illinois to survive, like, you're going to have to play perfect games, and you're not going to have the players to beat Northwest that October where you got, forget Oklahoma in a few weeks. You got the Northwestern, Michigan, Minnesota run that, to me, if those three all go the wrong way and you're going to walk in with inferior talent, that's pretty much it. You're ending with Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa. if you can't get through the middle per se of the Big Ten, you're sure as hell not doing anything in November. I mean, their last shot at a win is like October 30th against Purdue. And that talent was just was dreadful. He recruited a bunch of kids early from Florida. There's a bunch of kids from Miami. A lot of them have transferred. That was sort of the premise, was like, all right, you got Scott Frost. He's got these recruiting ties in Florida. He just came off a 13-0 season. You can build a formula that makes Nebraska work, and it just hasn't worked. Harbaugh gets more criticism, but Harbaugh has at least had some decent seasons, a lot of like good seasons. He hasn't done enough at all, but he's not going whatever this is, 12-21. So
yeah, he's Vince Lombardi compared to Scott Frost.
Yeah, I mean, Nebraska. I mean, Harbaugh generally wins the games they're supposed to win. That's right. It, except for last year. But yeah, he wins all the games he's supposed to win. You just can't beat Ohio State, can't quite. And all right. But, man, you'd kill for that. At this point, that's Nebraska's ceiling, you know.
Frost lost to Troy. Jim Harbaugh has not lost to Troy.
He's got the mighty Fordham Rams coming in this week. At line.
Buffalo has a chance.
Buffalo in a couple weeks. Sources, Buffalo's had the best practices. Can't wait for that. It was bad. Look, we've talked about this before. But like what can if Scott Frost doesn't work? I mean, we can pick on him now or say he's not doing a good job, but it was a no-brain hire.
Yeah.
Guy was the hottest coach in the country at the time. He went 13-0 at UCF, declared themselves national champs. Like he again, right? Alum, the whole thing. This is going to work. If anything's going to work, this is it. And it isn't even close to working. Where do they go? Can they ever really win in the Big Ten? I don't mean ever, but this is the risk of losing the Big 12 when you're going 9-3, 10-2, you're in big games. It's easier to get recruits. You lost your ties to Texas because you're not playing down there three times a year. You've changed. You're just another team in the Big Ten with a huge stadium, but you're farther away and even colder than the other places. You know, I remember Brian Kelly once during one of his unbeaten seasons. I remember they were like 9-0, and he remember saying to me, "Boy, that you know the recruits pick up the phone a lot quicker when you're 9-0. You may not get them, but man, they answer the call. You know, because he's had some up and down. You know, there's not always. And at this point, like, where does Nebraska go? What do they do, Pete?
So let me hijack this. I just saw on Twitter the unbelievable follow message board geniuses where basically they comb message boards. I mean, how this didn't happen sooner is one of the great internet failures, because even if there was like a website 15 years ago that just culled these, I mean, we would all go there every day to laugh at them, and now they just come to us on Twitter. So message board geniuses, Husker Online, SLO Husker, bear with me on this one. Jim Harbaugh's getting sick of coaching Michigan and being on the perpetual hot seat because he doesn't beat Ohio State. Long story short, maybe he'll come to Nebraska.
Well, there you go.
Nebraska, this is the post. Nebraska is a clean slate and no-lose proposition. He can show Michigan that they effed up by firing him or forcing him out. God bless message board geniuses.
Well, I got another one. I got another one for there.
From
the Kansas message board. A thread called Schedule Nebraska.
Man, you know that's a low
bad.
Point.
You know it's low bad point. When Kansas looks and says, maybe we can beat them.
It hasn't worked historically, but.
So go ahead. I have two intriguing names at Nebraska that have not been really bandied about yet that I think could work. One is, and I don't know the buyout number off the top of my head, go hire Mark Stoops. He has been perfectly competent at Kentucky, but probably reached the, what's he going into, year 8, 9 there, Pat?
Something like that.
So, like, he's been about as good as Kentucky as you can be. And, look, they just need to get baseline functional. But if Mark Stoops showed anything, it's that he could get a perpetually awful program to baseline functional. And he brings you recruiting ties in the Southeast, which you need. You need to go out of region. He is a proven winner at a place where in the immediate area, there is not talent. Now, there's some talent around there, but and there's more talent around Kentucky than there is in Nebraska. But I just think he's proven winner at an outlier. And at Nebraska, you have to admit you're an outlier program at this point. The other, and I don't think Trev Alberts would do it, but the other is you go take a dump truck of money to Minneapolis and you give it to PJ Fleck and let him inject energy and recruiting into that program and let it rip. And you go damage a place that has clearly leapt past you in the Big Ten West and let him try to leverage the brand of the Nebraska program and go. And I'm sure there's others, but those two to me are solution-based, not hope-based.
Why would either guy take that job?
Money. And there's a sense that they're defying gravity at their current program. And if you're defying gravity, you can only defy gravity for so long.
I see your points, Pete, and I think I like both the names there. I'm with Dan. I'm not sure at the end of the day either one says, yeah, I want to go do that. I don't know. I mean, maybe they do. As you said, I mean, they could probably throw more money at you, more, you know, like, hey, whatever you want, we'll do it for you than Minnesota, which has just never been a, you know, an absolute football money factory, and Kentucky, which, as we all know, the money factory is basketball. It's not football. So I think those guys would be at least worth a shot. And at the end of the day, I just wonder, gosh, I mean, boy, it's tough for me to say, yeah, I think I can do it at Nebraska. That would be I'd have a hard time convincing myself, even if I was PJ Fleck and I'm convinced I could win anywhere. Why go try to win there when I'm already doing well at Minnesota? So I don't know.
I could see PJ Fleck. Okay, I don't think he necessarily will, but yeah, I could see him. PJ Fleck's got that absolutely. If I'm Mark Stoops, I am not leaving Kentucky. I know you're not going to win the league. You're winning the league in Nebraska. He gets a ton of players from Ohio, which is right on the board. He's an hour and a half from Cincinnati. And he's, you know, a few hour drive up into Columbus and then the Northeast Ohio where his family's strong. They get a lot of kids out of Detroit. Like if I'm Mark Stoops, Kentucky will pay him. Their SEC's got so much money rolling in. I wouldn't do it. I think that's the problem. No disrespect to Nebraska. It's an historic program. It's got a great game day environment. It's you know, the whole scene. But, like, that's all it is at this point. And you look around and go, where am I getting players? How am I getting players? Who the hell do I have to beat to get anywhere? Like, they're staring up at practically the entire Big Ten West. And then you got to play the East.
So my pick on your point there, Dan, is this. Yes, Mark Stoops probably can never win the league at Nebraska, but he can win the division. And he cannot win the division in the league he's in right now. Look, you go bang your head against the wall for 8 years and you maximize a place. And Pat, would you agree he's pretty much maximized Kentucky football? You've watched a lot of bad Kentucky football, Pat. Like, yeah. He's done about as well as anyone in this generation. Rich Brooks had a nice little run there, but he's pretty much pushed it to what it could be. So you go, you take on one more big time job and you go push it up the hill again. I think that's, I don't know. I think he would consider. I mean, what are you going to do? Go be the coach at Kentucky for 15 years? Win, you know, everything goes right. You win 9 games.
Yeah. I tell you that the one thing, your point again, is well made. Stoops has got things wired well enough right now at Kentucky that he could have 6 players walk into a frat house and beat everybody up. And one of them allegedly wave a gun in people's face and nothing happens. The cops wait 6 months to charge anybody. There's no significant discipline. So, I mean, he's got some things going for him. He needs some Lawrence Phillips level cooperation at Nebraska to, you know, if he's going to be able to recruit.
Not a lot of civic duty going on over there.
Not a lot. Well, yeah. They were getting Jeremy Pruitt level civic duty. Like, yeah, we'll get around to charging him in like 6 months. Yeah.
That might have been the most like Pat comment in the history of Pat on our podcast.
Right, yeah, there. It turns it into a whack job with somebody else.
You shouldn't leave this job because the cops are on board.
I don't think there's any question that he is about maxed it out. Like, I don't think any of us would be surprised they come in second in the SEC East this year. They might be the smart pick. Maybe it's Florida. Right. Maybe it's them. Right. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to get, they would have to have an incredible upset of Georgia and run the tape. I mean, it's just, it's a very, very hard road. He's done what he's done, I guess. But I look at Nebraska and I just go, where are the players? How do you get players? They don't have any players. They got a bunch of nice 3 stars and stuff like that, or 4, you know, whatever they're recruiting, it's not on the field. So
yeah, as you pointed out in the beginning, Dan, I mean, like the lack of ability to just either run away from Illinois or bulldoze Illinois is a big problem. That means you are not fast enough and you're not strong enough. So you got to be
when
one or the other.
They were in the Big 12.
Both.
They had players.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Ndamukong Suh came from Portland, Oregon to go there, right? Yeah. Like yeah. They had some men. They had speedsters. They had, you know, and it goes to
who
a lot
the
of
the corner. Prince, he was in the NFL for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Time.
Mukamara.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Like that was a all Big 12 high. I don't know if he's a first round pick, but high NFL pick who played, you know, 8 years in the league. Right. Like they had dudes like that.
And even your 3-star wide receiver from Texas is just better than your 3-star wide receiver from Appleton, Wisconsin. Yeah. They just are. Wherever these kids are from.
And there's just more of them.
There's just more of them. And for God's sake, I hope for the respective Texas high school football, someone texts me, go, their entire wide receiving crew is from Texas. Because they might be, but they got the wrong guys then. I don't know. It's tough. It is hard. The Big Ten West is like this. We need to have another bead pot, right? I mean, it's a dogfight to get to respectability because there's a lot of decent programs now.
Definitively behind Illinois, having lost to them 2 years in a row.
That's, yeah.
Like if that doesn't extinguish hope, I don't know what does.
And they fired a guy.
My favorite stat is this is the first time since they went to the East and West divisions that Illinois has beaten the same team from the West 2 years in a row. That's how bad Illinois has been. And they just did it to Nebraska.
Let's talk a little Illinois. I have long said that Illinois is the most disappointing athletic department, at least in terms of men's and women, men's basketball and football. There's probably some other sports they're good at, but this is now, for a long time, it was the fifth biggest state, fourth biggest, then fifth, now sixth biggest. 12.8 million people live in the state of Illinois. The only other major major conference team in the state is Northwestern, which has never won anything in anything. No offense to whatever that one Rose Bowl team. Yet in basketball, they've had a couple moments. And in football, they don't do anything. I mean, I'm looking at this. They finished, since 2001, they finished in the AP top 25 once, 20th. In 2007, that Ron Zook Rose Bowl team with Juice Williams. Zook had it going a little. He had that 1-9-4 season. That's it. It has been, like, how do you have this many players, this many people in your state? Like, Nebraska's got an excuse to, like, nobody lives here. And the ones that do are old farmers. But Illinois, what's your excuse? And not only do you have Chicago 2 hours away and all the people and then all the downstate cities that put out players, they don't have elite talent in Illinois. It's kind of a weird high school football state. There's very few five-star. I don't think there's been a five-star since like 2017 out of the state. Chip Payne is Pat. You just drove over there. It's 2 hours from Indianapolis, which has a ton of players now. Indianapolis is a good high school football state now. They all got into it after Peyton Manning showed up, turned it into a football town. And St. Louis is two and a half hours, I'd say, from Champaign. And they got players. And East St. Louis is an excellent program. Everybody recruits East St. Louis. How the hell have you been so bad? I'm not going to overreact to one victory. This team is not that good, and they're not going to do a whole lot this year. Bielema can coach. I mean, even at Arkansas, other than the last year, we had one good year. They won. They beat, like, Florida once. They beat, you know, Ole Miss. They beat the TCU team. I remember. You know, they beat some good teams. They're not that bad. He was never that bad. He's great at Wisconsin. He's 51 years old. Like, could he steady this thing and build and build and build? Make Illinois respectable to where you're on the level of an Iowa or Wisconsin. You know, is this the guy that could conceivably do it? Because, I mean, Lovie Smith was never going to be there that long. And some of these other guys just didn't pan out. But I'm not saying tomorrow, because I'm not going to overreact to this victory. But, man, Bielema did a nice job on Saturday.
He really did. He and his staff just had the whole team so much better prepared than most of the Lovie Smith teams I saw. Certainly the Lovie Smith team that started the 2020 season by getting absolutely steamrolled. Illinois, had a plan and knew what they wanted to do. And then even when their starting quarterback gets injured after three series, they knew what they wanted to do. And they did change some things up, some for Art Sitkowski, who I want to give the, you know, the unofficial small sample Heisman to Art Sitkowski, the quarterback who came in for Brandon Peters for Illinois, who got thrown into the fire right away at Rutgers. And let's just say things didn't go very well for him. As a freshman, he was like the starter. That poor guy ended up with four touchdown passes and 18 interceptions as a freshman there. There was one game against Maryland. He was 2 for 16 for 8 yards with four interceptions. His quarterback rating was a negative 33, which is like impossible. So
wait, go over that line again.
Two for 16 for 8 yards with four interceptions. It may be the worst line in the history of quarterbacking. I don't know. I mean, certainly in the 21st century, I'd give it a shot at being the worst. So Art hung in there for 3 years.
I can't wait to get spammed this week on Twitter with worse quarterback lines than that. Bring it on.
You have a worse quarterback line than that. And we say this out of due respect because you came in and took care of business and beat the Huskers.
That's the thing. So he hangs in there. He transfers. He gets thrown into the mix, you know, and hey, he's 12 for 15 for 124 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. His rating's 193.44, 220 points better than that worst game. Good for you, man. Good for Art. Good for Illinois for having him ready and saying, you know what? And here's the thing, too. Bielema had been saying, this isn't my Wisconsin teams where we're just going to smash mouth you. We're going to have to do some things differently because he knows they're not good enough yet. And so they picked their spots. Art threw one great deep ball that ended up setting up a touchdown, and they just made it work. Ryan Walters did a great job coordinating the defense and calling the plays, and that team tackled well. That's one thing, and that's another way you knew that Nebraska had no separation because they were there to be tackled, and by God, Illinois tackled them. So I give Illinois a lot of credit, and yes, I think you walk away with exactly what Dan described, guarded optimism. Yes, maybe this is the guy who can do it. Maybe not right away, but you got to like that start and just the competence and confidence that Brett Bielema is going to bring, that he knows how to do this.
Brett Bielema, by the end of Arkansas, had turned into a bit of a caricature. There's no other way to say it. But I just think too often we judge coaches by their lowest moments as opposed to their bodies of work. And give Illinois credit. After one of the five worst hires of the last generation in Lovie Smith, which was first guest awful, execution poor. Maybe it's like a top 20 in the last generation.
He grew a beard like no one's business, though.
Oh, Lovie just, I mean, he was just dying to get fired. I mean, he was just dying to get fired the whole time. There was just that program had no energy, no identity. It was terrible. And I really think that what they did was they were like, okay, this guy has won the Big Ten West. He might have won the Leaders and Legends or whatever it was called before because he was around back in that era. But he has shown he can consistently win the league as a head coach in the league. You know, people forget Brett Bielema is an old K-State guy. So there are Bill Snyder bones in him. You know, like that's the same tree that produced the Stoops brothers.
Perhaps, literally. I don't know.
The Stoops brothers and Jim Leavitt and some like very serious coaches have come from that Bill Snyder tree. So I think Bielema humbled, goes to the NFL, learns from Bill Belichick, goes to the Giants, learns from Joe Judge. When coaches go to the NFL, I've had guys tell me this over the years, like you are so much better at the football aspect of things, the game management aspect of things. You're spending so much time on football specific situations that you just come back a much better coach. And we saw that in game management with Illinois on Saturday. So I was a huge fan of the Bielema hire. And look, they could lose to UTSA this week. I think that's very much on the table. They certainly could get pounded when they go to UVA in 2 weeks. But what you have right now is you have identity. They got a good, salty, veteran offensive line that returns 8 billion starters and starts. I don't think any of those guys are first-round picks, but they're big and they're old, and they can move defensive fronts and wear you down, which is what happened on Saturday. So I'm very bullish on the Bielema hire because I think he will guide them to the identity they need to go win football games. And having a coaching tenure where you lose and get fired. You can learn from that and evolve from that. And I think Brett's done that. I give him a ton of credit.
Yeah, I just think like if you give them the time to you give him these years to start putting recruiting together, work the in-state. I mean, there's a lot of people in Illinois that want Illinois to be good. You never want to send your kid to like a dysfunctional place. And I think it'll be functional and you'll start looking at it. And I think recruits and coaches and parents will say, you know what, this is what it's going to be. This guy's around. We know him. He's recruited, you know, certainly those west suburbs of Chicago. We got a number of kids to go to Wisconsin from Indianapolis again. There's a lot of potential at Illinois. It's just a matter. There's no reason that if you rewrote college football history and just looked at it, you go, why isn't Illinois? Hell, why isn't Illinois Nebraska? Right? Yeah. Why isn't Illinois one of the best? It's this big of a state and you have no competition. You know, the Indiana region, all this stuff. So it's there. I don't know. We will see. But that's a very exciting day for Illinois, and that'll probably conclude our Illinois football talk for the year.
Let me throw in one more real quick.
We'll be back. We'll be back.
No. Go ahead. They got to be a little worried about the crowd, though. I mean, and I understand there could be a certain percentage of your fan base that just doesn't want anything of going to a stadium still with the Delta variant going on and everything else. But announced attendance was 40,000. At least 15 was Nebraska fans, I would say. 12 to 15.
Were students back?
Yeah. Oh, the student section was full. I will say that till halftime. Then it emptied out significantly, even though they were winning.
It was a hot day.
Yeah, you got a new coach.
Pat, if we had given you the choice between writing your column or going and drinking six beers in the parking lot and we gave you some truth serum, what would you have chosen?
Man, I'm going to say I sat in the stadium all game, every game when I was a college kid. So I'm the wrong person to ask on that front. I didn't sit there sober.
No, I meant now, not when you were a college kid.
Well, now, yeah, okay. But no, I just think you got to look at that and be a little bit deflated. Like, we got a new coach. Everybody's been waiting to go to a game since 2019. And nope,
they've been waiting to go to an Illinois game. They wait to go to a Bears game.
Well, but if you want to talk about a lot of people who want to see Illinois be good, where are they?
They wanted to be good, but you have to win and motivate. I remember I said everything's 2 hours away. You got to motivate someone to drive 2 hours through a bunch of cornfields to get there. They're never going to have great attendance unless they're absolutely killing it. I mean, it's just too hard. I mean, you're just too far away from where people actually live. So
yeah, but that's,
it's, I think, hot. Like, man, you're like, I only got so many weeks to go up to my lake cabin up in Wisconsin, or I'm going to play golf. Like, you know, I'm not surprised. I mean, if this was a viable program the last 100 years, yeah, they would have had a crowd. But I can see why.
If this is a viable program the last 100 years.
Like, Red Grange was within century, the last 100 years.
All right, let's see.
The last 80 years, Tan.
They
Come
won
on,
the
get
Rose
it right.
Bowl in 63 by an old Pete Elliott.
Was that Dick Butkus?
Since then, they lost a Rose Bowl. Oh, there was a stretch of bad bowl games they went to under Makovic.
I forgot,
Ron Turner and the Micron PC Bowl in 1999. They still toasting that one.
didn't Ron Turner get into a Sugar Bowl early 2000s?
They did. Oh, yeah, they lost, though.
They got smoked by Nick Saban's LSU team. The 83 Illinois Rose Bowl team is one of the worst Rose Bowl teams ever. I'm sorry. They are. I saw them. Their season opener was my first game as a student at Missouri. Missouri killed them. And then they went through the Big Ten. I was like, they can't be the best team in the Big Ten. And then they went and got just rolled by, I think it was UCLA in the Rose Bowl.
All right, let's get to UCLA.
Yes.
44-10 over Hawaii. Absolutely rolled them. A couple of us thought the spread was too high. Pat, you went 4-1.
Yeah,
Pete,
I went
Dan,
4-1.
Sully, 3-2.
Let's get that out there.
I went 3-2.
I went 3-2 also.
Did we all have winning records? Once again, establishing our credibility as a betting pod.
Bet if you want the betting pod, race for the case later this week. It was funny. Last night, I watched the Jake Paul, the Jake Paul, Tyron Woodley boxing match. I know I'm a sick person. and they had the Barstool Sports guys on who are funny and entertaining, and they're not there to really give advice, but they before every fight they gave their pick. They lost every bet.
Didn't they really?
And they kept going. This one's going to go
pretty
the
much owned like by a, Penn Gaming, which is a gambling company. So you'd want them to give losing bets, right?
Yeah, that's, maybe that was the point.
That's
it
a good
really
profit
funny.
Strategy. So
they were laughing about it. I give them all credit. They're like, you know, but it was just funny. It was like, we're back 5 minutes. We just predicted it would go the distance and it ended in 12 seconds, but we're back now. And this fight, we totally got it. No, they were, it was funny. The only thing I truly predicted was UConn would melt in Fresno. I don't even believe they finished the game. Did that game end?
Did you see the pregame hit that everybody tweeted about where Fresno brought extra shoes in case their shoes melted?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Day game in August in Fresno on artificial turf. What could go wrong?
Yeah. The strip sack for the first points of the game, I believe is the first points of the game. I had two games on, was just like, you were like, oh, here comes 45-0 when it was just UConn's quarterback went back, got stripped, and it was a scoop and score, and it was all downhill for the Huskies from there.
Even Edsel couldn't get a bonus out of that disaster, could he?
Yeah. Patrick Stevens, our friend who longtime college sports writer, Patrick Stevens, had a great tweet. He said, it will require a $2,000 bonus for me to flip back to the UConn-Fresno game after halftime. That was a tweet right at our hearts.
All right. Anyway, UCLA, excellent effort. I'm sure Pete wants to hand out a small sample Heisman to someone at UCLA. I don't know. They look great. Hawaii did not look great. I don't know what that means when we get next week when LSU shows up. Who knows what the state of, you know, affairs for the LSU, how much is what's happened drag on them. You got a lot of kids from Louisiana on that team, obviously. Who, you know, it's very unnerving, but that'll be a big game we'll get to on the pod later this week. But how impressed were you with UCLA? How much can you take from this? Because this looked like, finally looked kind of like exactly what I always thought a Chip Kelly UCLA team would look like. It's taken a while, but at least unlike Scott Frost, we're getting there.
So I'm going to take my pod victory lap after getting beating up for being on the Chip Kelly bandwagon for the past 2 years. This was fun to watch because it looked like a Chip Kelly team. I mean, remember those Oregon teams just used to blast people in the non-conference. I mean, they would be up 45-3 at the end of the first quarter. They would just annihilate teams and then just sit on the ball in the second half and not do anything. So again, I'm not saying this UCLA team is going to make the playoff or anything like that, but it was fun to watch Chip Kelly essentially run three running plays and just completely shove the ball down the opposition's throat. And what I've said about this UCLA team came true. They have a very good offensive line. They have excellent tight ends, and they got two really good backs, including Zach Charbonneau, who we never saw run that hard or like that at Michigan. Did you? I mean, how, like, that's amazing to me that he looked that good after looking fine. He was fine at Michigan. He was okay.
Big-time recruit who looked fine, yes, but
he didn't look anything like that to me at Michigan. He had moments, but again, it's Hawaii, so I'm not going to get too excited, but it was just nice to see Chip dialing it up again and UCLA to have a little bit of swagger. The defense also really played well too, which has, that's really been early on for Chip. That was really the downfall. And look, this UCLA team is, they're maestros of the portal, right? They have not recruited five stars. Chip is going to coach guys he likes. They churned over the roster from Jim Mora, which was a bunch of like four stars who weren't great fits. And this team has been a slow burn build for Chip, and it is at least viable and fun, and it's nice to see UCLA relevant.
Yeah, I literally saw none of the game, but I did, you know, I checked the stats and everything, and yeah, that's what you want a Chip Kelly team to look like, is one that can absolutely run the ball at will and beat you with speed, formation, execution, blocking, which apparently they did. But you can take the victory lap, Peter, but they've got to do it again against a team that's probably going to line up a little and be a little bit tougher to run against. And maybe they will. Maybe they'll still have success. Maybe they have a lot that they didn't show against Hawaii. Still want to see Thompson Robinson throw it a little bit better. But
he was just okay.
So we'll see what they bring to the table this week. And as Dan alluded to, I mean, just if from a purely competitive standpoint, UCLA has LSU where they want them, you know, in disarray, out of town, came off a 10-hour bus ride from Baton Rouge to Houston just to get away from the hurricane. I'm sure a lot of those players are very concerned about family and friends left behind. It's not an ideal way to go into a football season opener, that's for sure.
They will be a little tougher to block next week for that. But now, very impressive for UCLA.
And they'll have a little more fans in the stands. There's already LSU fans out there tailgating. So
we're there.
Sully, what'd you think of the Bruins? You saw the mighty Bruins up close after a few beverages. What'd you think?
A fun experience at the Rose Bowl. Game sucked, especially when we're on Hawaii. Yeah, the biggest takeaway was there was some purple already tailgating. One guy I found was there had been there for 2 weeks already.
Sully sent us the picture on the group text. He looked like Les Miles' cousin.
They went and tailgated at their opponent's game week before game, and they were still late from some of them. I mean, now Pasadena is a nice place to camp. I mean, if you're going to hang out, get out of that southern heat. Lord knows they didn't know the weather was coming, but they're scouting. Case Coach O needs a scout.
I guarantee
report.
It. They were sending emails to Coach O. Well, this is not their lining up in on third and short, Coach. Just want you to be ready.
We coming at lsu.edu. His email's got to be Coach O at lsu.edu. Right?
I hope so.
It's easy to. He's probably not that hard to hack. I'm not saying anyone should do it, but it's like we coming is his password. I don't know.
It's probably what's not Coach O's middle name? Do we know that?
I don't think he doesn't have one. Barely has a first name. It's my favorite middle name. You ever heard this middle name story?
It's James.
Oh, it's James.
You know Abe Lemons, the old Oklahoma, like,
legendary,
Baptist. Yeah. And then he was at Texas for a long time. Very funny old basketball coach. He grew up in
the
Depression.
The great characters.
Yeah. Grew up in the Depression in Oklahoma, Dust Bowl, Oklahoma. And his name is A.E. Lemons. That was his name. But he started calling himself Abe because it just became too hard to tell people his name was A.E. So he just gave himself the name Abe. So they said, what does A.E. stand for? And he said, nothing. They just gave me initials. He says, I was born so poor, we couldn't afford a first name.
That's terrific.
My favorite name stories. So you're giving Zach Charbonneau your small sample Heisman, Pete? We're not doing a set thing.
Yeah. You know what? I'll give it to the whole Bruins offensive line. How about that? I mean, Dan, you could have ran for 100 yards on Saturday.
Not all at once. I have a small sample Heisman, but it's not a football player. I'm giving it to this kid, Gavin Ulin. Gavin Ulin plays for the Taylor Michigan Little League World Series championship team. They won the Little League World Championship. A credit to all the Little Leaguers who played. This kid, I give it to him for two reasons. One, he's not a pitcher, but they were out of pitchers because, you know, they got all these pitch counts and safety and stuff. So they had to make him pitch the last inning of the Little League World Series and hold off the Ohio team. Like, is there a bigger nightmare in sports than having to pitch when you're not a pitcher?
No.
You're like the second baseman or whatever. It's like, oh no.
That's pressure.
He hit two dudes, walked three guys, but somehow won the game. Is not that. Gavin Ulin has his own lawn mowing business. They did a little feature on him during the game. He charges $40 a lawn and he's got 10 clients.
Wow.
This kid's 12. He's making $400 a week.
Of course, Wessel loves the lawnmower guy.
I am going to hire this kid to come up. I'll pay extra if you come all the way to my house. I love this kid. And he was at the Little League World Series, pushes his dad's lawnmower around. He's making $400 a week, like 20 to 25 weeks. He's making like 10 grand a year.
Damn.
All under the table, too, now.
Well, we don't want to accuse him. 12-year-old of tax fraud. It's not narc him out, Pete. But yeah,
I mean, he's 12. I don't think the IRS is going to go after a 12-year-old.
Man, I don't know. Anyway, since he was at the Little League World Series, could do his round, so he made his grandfather do it. I love this kid. Good lawn mowing 12-year-old who can also win the Little League World Series. That's my guy.
You'd actually let him cut your lawn? I thought nobody got to cut your lawn.
I might let him. Okay. He's a world champion.
Yeah. It's pretty big.
I don't know. I probably have to like go pick him up. He can't ride his bike. Can't push his mower to my house. Lives too far away. Anyway, congratulations. Yeah, I got this this note here from West Virginia University President E. Gordon Gee, who's, of course, been president of like 14 colleges, most notably Ohio State, and a staunch anti-playoff guy. Remember he once said they have to drag the playoff from my cold, dead hands? It's a great quote. Pete often calls him, I think, late at night in case he's into the bourbon to get really good quotes.
He's Mormon, actually. So.
He's Mormon. Really? Not that. Maybe he's just tired. I don't know. Anyway, this one, he's opposing the playoff. I am on the College Football Playoff Board of Directors, and I was a strong advocate for the 12-team playoff. I am now no longer, because I think with this changing environment, we want to keep it very narrow and keep it there. So there's a lot of opportunity to reconfigure what we're doing in athletics. He said, I think it's on life support. I have one of the votes. I think it nearly needs to be unanimous. I'm not voting for it. I think it was a good idea when there was stability. So Gordon Gee is saying there will be no 12-team playoff because the Big 12 is not stable. And I only wonder what the hell the guy is thinking. You are now a group of five program. You should be running to a playoff proposal that offers up six automatic bids. This is literally the last lifeline getting thrown off the side of the Titanic for Big 12 teams. Pete, you know this guy well. He's your buddy. What is he talking about? Is there a thinking here why you would oppose this plan at this point?
So I'm going to tell my favorite Gordon Gee story here. his second most famous quote, after you can pry the playoff out of my cold, dead hands, was that when he was the president at...
Well, Ohio State, I mean, he had the famous quote there.
Yeah, he said, I think I asked him the question.
Oh, was
maybe
that your question?
I was there. Maybe not. I don't know. I can't remember. Would you fire Jim Tressel? And he said, I hope Jim Tressel doesn't fire me.
Yes.
I mean,
so this is his third most famous quote.
Okay. All right.
when he was at Ohio State, he referred to TCU and another one as the
Boise.
Little Sisters of the Poor. Correct.
Yeah.
And then he ended up like actually going to the Little Sisters of the Poor in Ohio somewhere and like making him a lot of money because he's Gordon Gee. Like he's just a survivor and he's charming and he's kind of funny. So
he TCU, volunteered with them. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it was a nice,
good move.
I actually, when I was at the New York Times, I actually went to the Little Sisters and did a story. They were wonderful people. That year, TCU beats Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, Pasadena, California. I'm looking at it right now. My game story, January 1, 2011. So after the game, I go back to the press box and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to call Gordon Gee. It's quiet in the press box. And so basically I get Gordon on the phone and the 10, 15 people around me are all like cracking up because I got Gordon Gee on the phone. And to his credit, he said, I will eat. He was in New Orleans visiting his daughter. And he said, I'm going to New Orleans tomorrow. And Antoine's is a famous restaurant in New Orleans. He said, I think they serve crow. I'll be eating my portion of that. So this is a way to say, even when he says things that are nonsensical, to be polite, Gordon Gee can talk his way out of them. And what he said about the playoff wasn't particularly sensible. Like what they're doing now is posturing with the power they have. But I wrote a big Future of the Big 12 column last week. And if people didn't read it and listening, they can look it up. There are two things that matter to the Big 12. One is TV money. And two is access to the playoff. You can just cut everything else out. Those are your two North Stars if you want a vibrant, viable future in college athletics. And cutting off any potential lifeline to the playoff is not smart. So what the Big 12 has to do is leverage maybe some sympathy, leverage maybe some TV angst, and make sure, however this 12-team playoff is recreated, they're in a position where whatever their league looks like, it's attainable to get there.
Yeah, I've reached the point where I feel like if Gordon Gee says something and it's nonsensical, then my feeling is that I'm on the right side of it because he's just nine times out of 10, the first instinct to come, impulse to come out of his mouth is going to be wrong. And this one, he's dead wrong, at least in terms of what's in the best interest of West Virginia. I mean, it's pretty darn clear. You need the biggest playoff possible if you are West Virginia. First of all, you ain't the best team in your conference. And so you want the Big 12 or whatever league you're in to get multiple bids. And then secondly, yeah, the Big 12 is hanging by a fingernail and probably could well end up being relegated to a group of five sort of designation. And then you want to try to get that. So he's, you know, this again, so many people in college athletics, the first impulse is let's protect the status quo all the time. Even if it doesn't make sense for your team or your league or whatever, the status quo is not good for West Virginia. You need a bigger playoff for sure.
If you don't have access to the playoff, like reasonable access, you'll never get the TV money.
Yeah,
it is the single most important. You won't get the recruits and you won't get the TV money. It is the single most important thing. The Big 12, like the old Big East that died because they didn't do enough. This was always their lifeline. Their only chance of keeping Texas and Oklahoma was if Texas appreciated the path to the playoff. And it didn't work out, but if it hadn't been that automatic bid, then maybe Texas doesn't jump. But instead, they opposed it for all these years, and now they're finally getting around to it, and boom, it's too late. Maybe they would have gone anyway. But the moment that the playoff could have saved everything all along. And yet these leagues like the Big East and the Big 12, when it was under Dan Beebe, it was like, what are you doing? This is your thing. Don't you see you're not really equal with these other guys, right? Like, it's just, you're going to get cut. And now they're all got cut. Now they're going, but then he's still opposing it. So I think someone will talk some sense into Gordon. He has been a lot of fun from a media perspective. But man, I was like, oh, well, here we go.
Do you guys agree the Big 12 needs to go uber big, supersized to 16?
I liked your column on that. I liked your reasoning. I thought that it made sense for two reasons. One, as you pointed out, you cut the legs off of your competitors that are nipping at your heels to be the fifth best conference. You know, you take teams from the Mountain West, you take teams from the AAC. You got to go get the Cougars. I'm sorry that, you know, everybody's gone on and on for years about how they'd be a bad conference partner because of their high maintenance. You know, they've got a lot of religious strictures that go along with them. But so what? You go get them. You get the best, whether it's Florida, whether, you know, in the state of Florida, whether it's Cincinnati, whatever. Anyway, you cobble it together big, and then you can withstand if other schools are going to leave. So it gives you size, and it does hurt your competition. I think that's your best choice.
I think you hold the line at six automatic bids, and then if you can't get that, yeah, you can't. You cash in on your brand. The Big 12 is a better name than the others. I want to see where the playoff goes. If you got six, you don't necessarily have to go to 12. Or 16 teams, because if you had 16 teams, some of your schools, I mean, right back where you started, you might not, you know, only one of 16 teams is making it. So I don't know. But if there's six automatic bids laying out there, you got to feel pretty good if you're the Big 12 that you're going to get one of those every year. And that's not bad. And if you only have eight teams, but yeah, if you get back to 10 or you get to, I don't know. All right. We got to pick these last. We're going to pick a bunch of games later in the week for the Race for the Case. We're going to have a separate podcast where we look into all the games and talk going forward. But there are two big Thursday night games we want to get to now, because when the Race for the Case comes out, who knows? So let's do this. We'll start. We'll have a supersized Race for the Case this year. Ohio State at Minnesota, 8 p.m. Thursday on Fox. Delicious opening night game for the Big Ten schedulers. They did a great job. Big Ten, great job scheduling. Getting things off the bat. Ohio State's giving 14, 90% of the bets and 86% of the money on BetMGM is on Ohio State.
Yeah, I thought about this a lot. 14 is a big number, but I really feel like just from a pure talent perspective, Ohio State is at least three touchdowns better than Minnesota. I think Minnesota will run Muhammad Ibrahim. They have that huge offensive line. There is a way for them to shorten the game and keep this close. But I just think the preponderance, and obviously CJ Stroud starting his first game, and there's some unknowns there. But I just think the preponderance of overall talent is going to is going to win out here. Tanner Morgan is a very good higher end Big Ten quarterback, but I don't think he has the dynamism to really hurt the Buckeyes in the secondary. For all interested parties, I would just, if you are going to dabble on BetMGM on this game, I would just wait and see what the health of Chris Ottman Bell is. He's Minnesota's best receiver. He's been progressing back from an injury, but it's not certain he's going to play. We're taping this Monday morning. And so he is, one of the five best players on the Gopher roster. And any decision you make on this game, you should just factor him in mind.
I took the home dog last week in the Big Ten game, and it worked, and so I'm going to do it again this time. There is a chance Minnesota gets boat raced here, just in terms of talent and speed. But, again, 14 points, pretty sizable number, and 20 returning starters on one team, 11 returning starters on the other. If they can control the line of scrimmage and they can run the ball with Ibrahim and a very veteran offensive line going up against a Ohio State front seven that is replacing a lot of guys, I think they've got a chance to at least be in it. I don't think they're going to win. Best case is it's a touchdown game, probably more likely 10, maybe 13. But 13 is better than 14 because the line's 14. So I will take the Gophers and the points.
Ooh, this has backdoor written all over it. Ohio State replacing everybody in the back end of their defense as well, with Tanner Morgan being able to piggybacking off of Pete there. If Altman Bell can play, they might be chunking the ball around late in that game and be able to get a backyard cover. But with all that being said, I'm going to go with the talent. Give me the Buckeyes.
This fourth quarter is going to be like a nightmare. I think I'm going to go with Minnesota, but it's going to be tight because 14 is a lot of points. Ohio State's a better team, but there's so many unknowns. Quarterback, there's so many unknowns on Ohio State. A little bit more in Minnesota. Home dog, also weeknight home dog.
Yeah.
That's one of my
tenets. Opener nullifies that a little bit, but yeah.
They're going to be sauced up there. The game is
and
it's the Buckeyes. It's going to be a rowdy environment. The whole thing. I am going to take.
What's a good local brew there, Pat? That they'll be drinking in Minneapolis.
Surly Brewing Company in Minneapolis.
Oh,
there you go. Standing.
There you go.
They'll be all over the.
If there was ever a brewing company built for Pat 40, it would be the Surly Brewing Company.
Damn right. They got Surly. Actually, they have a beautiful actually beer garden, beer hall, like home place thing. It's fantastic. I recommend anybody going to that game to go to the Surly Brewing Company and sample.
Get down to Sally's Saloon, right? Isn't that the one right near there? It's pretty good.
Not near the stadium? Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Sally's Saloon. I believe it's a pretty popular with the college kids. I don't know. But we'll have to get with our University of Minnesota correspondent, Jeff Shellman. Let us know.
Good call.
Loyal listener. Next game. Other game. Boise State at UCF. Delicious little game, 7 p.m. on ESPN. Central Florida is giving 5.5, 70% of the bets, and 90% of the money are on UCF. No respect for Hank and the Boise State Broncos.
Oh, I love the Golden Knights here. Or I'm sorry, they're no longer the Golden Knights. I say that on occasion, and I get angry responses from the very responsive fans of the Knights. I like UCF here. I think Boise's talent probably is not what it was in their heyday. They've had a coaching change now, new coach stepping in, road game. We have a new coach, obviously, also at UCF, but I think Gus Malzahn plugs in well with the leftover talent there. I think he's going to do really good things with Dylan Gabriel. And I think that they are going to put a lot of points on the board, and they will win and cover.
I always like it when I go against Pat twice. Makes me feel good. I'm going to take
Boise. It shouldn't after last week.
Yes, you did go 4-1 last week, and I went 3-2, Pat.
4-1 is better than 3-2.
It is. That is correct. Hashtag analysis.
Math. It's all math.
Yeah. The last time I took Boise in an opener and said I was on the Hank Bachmeier bandwagon, I got laughed off the podcast. I remain on, and they won at Florida State to open the season. I remain on the Hank Bachmeier bandwagon, and I will take Boise. They returned 16 starters. They have two tailbacks who can control the ball and slow the game down, and I think they can go there. They traveled 2 days early, by the way, which is when you're going cross country, nullifies some of the jet lag, that being a huge factor there. And I think Boise meets the moment.
The Bachmeier bandwagon's getting run over by the Gus bus, baby. Let's go.
The bus is
going to be rolling. It's going to be 88% humidity down there, and they're going to melt.
They survived that Florida State game a couple years ago. Great game. I'm going to go with Boise. I think they bounce back. I'm going to have to see the Gus bus work at UCF to go with it. So I'm with Pete on this. I think Boise covers. I don't know if they win, but I think they cover. This is our first two.
Is the Bachmeier bandwagon pulling into Waffle House, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. We eat your waffles.
Yeah, they definitely don't have a Waffle House in Boise, I don't think. So they're going to have
smothered
to get it.
And covered. Remember Pat's Boise bus back in his ESPN days? You ran that bit for a good amount of time.
I did. Ran it hard from 2010-11, something like that.
I'm looking on the Waffle House website right now. Yeah, it looks like the closest Waffle House to Boise is in Collinsville, Illinois.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no, wait. Fort Collins.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Not close, by the way.
No, not close.
But the game isn't there.
No.
They got no respect. They're going to disrespect the Waffle House. They don't. Waffle House means nothing to them. They grow those potatoes, you smother and cover and dice and whatever. All right, we'll be back later this week. Appreciate y'all listening. Get ready for the season. Good times. Please subscribe. Tell your friends and share us on social media. Appreciate all of it. Talk to you later.